June 24th, and I'm at Roxy Ikawana's home doing an interview on the Utqiagvik site. Do you have any old photos of Utqiagvik that we could look at or copy?
I don't think I have the old copies of the old Utqiagvik. You mean those those old houses that exist?
Yeah, just any old photographs of that area over there, if you had
no,
any.
No, I don't think I have any of that.
You know anybody who might have?
I doubt. Some might have, but I cannot tell who would have some.
Why was that a good place to have a village?
Why was that?
Why was the Utqiagvik site a good place to have a village in the old days?
In certain ways, when we lived only by hunting and fishing, the site is good for sea mammal hunting, or like seals, ugruk, walrus, and whale, beluga, things like that that comes through the spring and or in the fall, and also the seals the whole year when the ice is around, you know, even after freeze up. And also the place where they go in summer for duck hunting is the shooting station at Picnic.
Was there anything about the site, about the bluff or water or anything that would make that a particularly good place?
Well, in one case, before they started to do anything like digging things or around that area where that small creek is. And I understand that creek out there was always clean in summer, and it's just running out from the lakes, and they use that for drinking water out of that creek that runs down from the close by lakes.
That's the ravine. You're talking about the ravine that's out here?
Yeah.
There's no water in it now, I don't think. But
well, just a little bit of it when it rains, but it dries up mostly, and it's not fit for drinking anymore.
Yeah. Did the people live at that site year-round?
Yes, they do.
Was it a gathering place for people?
Well, especially in summer like this, for Nelukatuk and so on, when the celebrations are taking place after the whaling season is over. People from a point out here for 10, 11 miles up would come down for that purpose, and even some from Wainwright when they don't have any whale catch that season.
Do you know anything about the Karigis that were out there?
What?
Do you know anything about the Karigis that were out there? The ceremonial men's houses?
Karigis?
Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit. I understand that there were two of them.
Uh-huh.
At the time, before they start building those modern small houses around the 1800s or so. There was one site which is called Sirilivamil on the site, somewhere along close to the beach, I think. Just east side of that gully there.
Oh, yeah, where Levi has his dogs?
No, not this side.
The other side?
This side.
Oh.
Right across from Levi's.
Across from Levi's,
from
yeah.
somewhere over
okay.
there.
Yeah.
I don't remember where that location has been.
Yeah.
But the other one, another Kargi, which is called Kilulagamute. The site is still visible, just close to Andrew Owain's house.
Oh, okay, yeah. So you can still see that
yeah,
mound?
Yeah, we still can see that.
Yeah, good. You don't know when, do you know when they last used that?
I don't know.
Were there other communities around here?
At the time?
Yeah.
The only nearest community was at the point, which we call Nobuk.
Yeah.
That's the closest one. People live there all year around.
Nobody at Biganik?
No, not at the time, because the story is
yeah.
they were the first village there before they moved down here to Otkal's site. They lived there first. I don't know about the point. There might be a living first at the point and some at the picnic before they moved down here to Kavik site.
Did people travel to other sites from here? Like they traveled back and forth between Nubuk and
Yes, almost every day they visit their relatives at the point and came back again, and people from Point would come down here and visit with them once in a while. That happens in winter and also in summer, the year around.
Did people do different things at the other sites?
Like well, I think they're about the same,
mm-hmm.
the same things that they do.
How far away is the other site? I think you just told me it was about 12 miles.
About 11 or so miles.
11 miles. How have things changed from the way they were before at Utqiagvik?
It has changed quite a lot. The change is due to the people, the Tunics, coming up north on boats, such as whaling vessels, some traders that came up after the discovery of the people that lived up here. That changes.
Who were the traders here?
The traders that I have heard were some people that by one person was named by Kelly. That was before my time. I don't know if there is any before him or others. I don't know.
He was even before Brower?
Yes. Before Brower. There were, I think there was a company of some kind that worked for the company down in Lower 48 at the time, some years before Brower came.
What things did the traders bring in here?
Well, such as guns, ammunition, some shells, some lead and powder and primers. Those were the times when they used musket guns.
Oh yeah, muzzle loader.
And also the whaling guns and things like that. Some flour, pilot bread, syrup, or molasses. That comes in barrels. That's the way I've heard about it from my parents.
Were the traders here all the time, or were some just traveling through?
Well, the way I understand that, they were here all the time. The first that I know of is the Liebes Company. It's Liebes and Company that had the store in here, long after the Kellys and some others are gone. And Brower was one of the first traders that worked for that company. And right somewhere around on the 20s, they started a trading post besides that, which the natives should get together, sell their reindeer carcass and trade that for some goods to start a native store here. That's the only other one that they have. And just before that, there was another schooner that came up by the name of Transit, four-masted schooner, but sailing boat, owned by Captain John Backlund, Sr.
What was his name?
Captain John Backlund.
Backlund.
Yeah, Backlund, Sr. I remember him.
He was here just before the 20s?
Yeah, before the 20s, yes.
Have people used this site for anything since you can remember? I'm talking about the old site of Ukiavik, that, you know, the open field out there with all the mounds.
Yeah.
On it. Has anybody used that area for anything that you can remember?
I don't remember of anything what they used that for, except right where Levi Grice houses located on that spot. That spot is kind of level, right above that bluff there.
On top of the bluff, you mean?
Yeah, on top of the bluff, and from the higher part is kind of lower. I know that there's a flat spot there, and they use that for Nelukata.
Oh.
Nelukata ground. And right over that, towards the north from there, just a little ways from there, a few feet from that place, people would gather on that flat surface before the people start to build modern small houses. Some men would gather in a good evening and just take fresh air and talk around among themselves. Just stay out for fun, that's all. And sometimes in the daytime, that would be a playground for the kids, that flat spot. That used to be a big one towards the ocean. Now it's just a little bit of it left.
It's eroded away from the ocean side?
Huh?
Has it eroded? Has it eroded away from the ocean?
Yes.
Yeah. How do you teach young people about Ukiavik?
Some evenings, in the short days, in the family, and when they had some visitors from a different house, some would visit and they would talk about things that has happened before or before their time, and at the same time that they are living. That would be told to the children, and some instructions they would give what to do if they went out hunting, and how to treat others, something like that, how to make things and like that, especially in some times like when those Hargis are redressed, are in use. Yeah. Men would gather some evening, and after a hunt, they would go there and make things and talk about the things that they do and what they make, and some young folks would be there also and learn something from these people.
Do they still teach people about it today? About the old days at Ukiak?
Yeah, I think so. I think some little bit of it or part of it is being taught at schools.
I was wondering if you had talked about it when you were talking to the children over at the school before.
Yeah, I do that whenever I had the time.
Yeah.
I would talk to some of them like that, what they do and what they make and how they make a living.
Are there any songs about Ukiavik?
I don't know.
Dances?
Yeah, there are some dance songs, but it doesn't, I don't know whether the songs mean something about battle or Ukiavik.
Oh, any stories about Ukiavik?
Yeah, there are some, yes. What happens in different times, and how they had the visitors, and how they treat them.
Where did they get water and wood and other necessities from when they were living on Ukiavik?
As I understand, they don't use wood too much because they had blubber or fuel. They don't have stoves. All they have is the seal lamps, seal oil lamps, made out of a soapstone. And also from the copper. I don't know where they would purchase the copper, but whenever they had it, they pound it down and make it kind of something like a plate or something, and make a seal lamp out of a copper. That is handier for traveling, and it's lighter than the soapstone.
Do you think that they would have got the copper from some of the Indians?
Well, probably copper might have come from Canadian side.
Oh, yeah.
Or somewhere up from inland, from the Indians.
Mm.
But it's possible that some of it might have also come from the Canadian side.
You mentioned before that they got water from the stream when it was running. Were there any other places that you know of that they might have got water from?
Yes, from the Bicker Lake right close by. And they are dry right now.
Okay. Where was that lake located?
The first lake was located right by the airstrip over here. You can see a part of it just along the edge of it on the other side.
Uh-huh.
That's where they get the water by carrying it in summer and haul it by sled in winter when it's frozen.
Any other lakes besides
that? Just below that, there's another one.
Oh.
You know where that, what do you call that hut over there? belong to North Slope or ASRC.
I don't know. That Quonset hut?
Yeah, the Quonset hut that's over there. Just right above that.
Oh.
There's another bigger lake than this one.
Pretty close to the site then.
Yeah. And that one was dry.
That's dry now.
Yeah.
Yeah. What did people do at Utqiagvik at different times of the year?
Different times of the year is, it depends what they want to do. The season has different types of things that they have to do. At this time, after Nalakota, the people who had boats would go down the course for seal hunting.
They're going towards Wainwright?
Yeah, towards Wainwright, as far as that down 15 miles or beyond. And some would go clear down to the Beard Bay for seal hunting. The people who want to be more successful, rather than staying here where quite a bunch of men would be hunting. So where they could find more without others getting into them. And that way they would get quite a bunch of ugrooks and seals for winter use, and came back as soon as the ice went out. And others, right after Nalakota, would start getting ready to go up the rivers in order to hunt caribou in summer. Soon as after Nalakota, they would drag their boats out to that where the lake has a creek that runs out to the lagoon, which is called Alba. We call that lake Iksoal, right by the gas well out here.
Oh.
They drag their sleds, boats out there, and their equipment, and get into that lake, and travel along where that creek runs out. And when they get to this spot, they drag their boats again into another lake, by land, no snow, in summer, and get to a big lake, and start using their boats until they get into the creek that runs into another first river. And that's where they scatter. The ones that are going eastward follow the course that is free of ice. And the others just start traveling by boat up the river.
What river is that?
That's, there were three rivers that they used at the time. Innaru, the first one, the next, Meat River, and the next, Kalavik, which they call now Tuparu River.
The what river?
Tuparu River.
Kupawak.
Tuparu. But that's not the proper name. Tuparuk is the name of the campsite on one spot. But the river itself has a name, Kalavik.
Kalavik.
Right. And the next river to that is the Chip River, Ikpikpak. Those are the four rivers that they used to travel up river to hunt caribou for the summer, for crowing, and for trading, and fishing at the same time.
And then some of the people went along the coast further east.
Yeah. After they get ready with what they wanted to bring with them, dried seal skins that can be made out into water boots, and also some with dried Ugru skins for soles, and also with some whale meat and things like that that they want to trade with the Eskimos that don't do seal hunting and that lives up inland most of the time. And they would travel up the coast until they get to Nicholas River, where the people that winter up inland along the Colville and those places would come down early in summer. As soon as after the river breaks up, they went down to that spot, started waiting for the people to come from Barrow so they can trade there. And they do the trading.
Did those people from Barrow put their boats in up here by the shooting station in Elson Lagoon or up by the
river? Yes, some. Yes. Okay. Most of them would be there, put their boats there before the breakup, before it begins to thaw on the edge. Wait, so there will be travel easier after it opens a little on the edge. And if you believe it or not, some would also travel down the coast. The ones who are going to go up towards Nicollet. Imagine that.
They would travel down the coast?
Down the coast.
Down this way?
Down this way.
Towards Wainwright?
Towards Wainwright.
Yeah.
And there is a spot which is called Sinharrock. Yeah. That there is a creek that runs out into that ocean. Soon after the breakup of that place there, while it's still full, they loaded their boats and start dragging their boats through that creek until they get into the lake up inland. I know the spot because I go through that once. There was the lake and the creek that runs out into the ocean. And they get into that lake, they pull up their boats, and there was another lake right by it. They drag their boat into that other lake, and their equipment carrying them.
Just like you were saying a few minutes ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And loaded their boats, and they shoved them out in that other lake, that big lake, was called Sikulik.
Sikulik.
Sikulik. And there was a creek also from that lake that runs eastward towards Inaro River. That's the only spot where they drag their boats. And they follow that creek and let the current help them to travel down easier until they get out into Iviksuk, where the...
Iviksuk, yeah. I know.
Yeah, Iviksuk, where the Inaro River is.
Seems like a lot of work.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of work, but most of the times they would beat the ones who are waiting at the Alson.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Would they have a race?
No, sometimes when it's real cold weather, the edges of that salt water doesn't thaw quick enough, you know.
Oh.
Especially when the time would be kind of cold, you know. All the others never stopped that traveled by that route.
How did they drag their boat? Did they put it on a sled?
No, I understand they carry pokes made out of seal skin. They inflated those and used them for the pontoon. I've done that.
They drag it over the ice?
No, over the tundra.
Over the tundra?
Over the tundra, in order to put the boat into another lake or into the river.
So they, okay. They use the seal skin as pontoons.
Yeah.
To drag it over the tundra and they
yeah,
drag
that's
it by hand
like,
with
yeah,
the ice?
Like, like a tire, you know.
Oh, like a tire, yeah. Yeah, like a big roller gun.
Yeah.
Put it under the boat?
Yeah.
Push
then
it over,
then push,
pick it up?
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
One or two men could do that.
Yeah. Pretty good. That would be an umiak?
Yeah. The size of umiak varies. The smaller one was with five ugruk skins, the next larger with six ugruk skins, and the next seven. Some would have about, bigger than that would be eight or nine skins that can be used to cover the framework of that boat. It depends how big a person wants to make his boat.
They could put all their equipment in the umiak and then roll it on those
no,
ladders?
No,
no.
Mm-hmm. Just a boat.
Boat.
The heavy stuff they carry.
Did they have dogs?
Yes, they had dogs.
Did they use them at that time?
Yes, yes.
They use the dogs for packing things or
yeah, pulling? Packing things, yes, and pulling. In those cases, they had the sled that is just big enough to carry the boat with some load on it. They have to travel through the ice before breakup. That is. When they started from Kirinet, before the ice is rotten in that spot, they would put all their equipment into the boat and drag this, the boat that is on the sled. And when they hit the water, they put everything in the boat, including the sledge. If they are going to use them again. But when they have to, they would just leave the sled behind so they can pick it up on their way back.
When did they start doing certain kinds of things at Utqiagvik? You remember when any new kinds of things started?
New kinds of things?
Yeah, some kind of change from some old way when they stopped doing something and then they would start doing some things a different way.
Well, I, from the story is that when they start to use heating stoves, or cooking stoves. That's one of the big changes that they have. Earlier, they almost used only the seal oil in their seal lamp, although every igloo, not the snow house, don't mistake me for that, people outside understand that igloos are snow houses. The igloos we meant is the ones that are made out of driftwood and covered with sod. That's an igloo. And there's a long entryway on that igloo. And on one side of it, there is a little hole with the opening on the top, which they use as a kitchen, like outside fire. just in order to cook a heavy meal, but with some little bit of driftwood, they built fire there, and also used blubber to burn in that thing, and cook their meals in there, in the entryway. The seal oil lamps are heated. Heating the house itself. And when they change to use cooking stoves after the whites came in, they start to consume the hot drifted wood, were drifted in along the coast. And that doesn't take too long to consume what has been dried along the coast in phases of driftwood. And they begin to use blubber, such as seal blubber, ugruk blubber, seal blubber, and beluga blubber. Any kind of a blubber they can get hold of, they burn that as a fuel. And it's pretty hard. You have to hunt. Be a good hunter to, in order to supply the house with fuel, just like that.
What kind of a stove was it that they first started using? How big?
The iron stove.
Iron stove?
Yeah.
The great big kind?
No, the small one.
The small one?
Yeah. About so long. Yeah. They got ovens right in the middle where both doors open from each side.
Let's see, can you list the animals? You talked about this before, but the animals that they caught near, right around Utqiagvik, can you list them again? All the animals that they used to catch around here?
Yeah. In spring and during summer, they use eider ducks, any kind of bird that they can get a hold of, like old squaw, even seagulls, jakers, some snipes, late in the summer, just before freeze up. There would be a bunch of them swimming around the edge of the coast. Late in summer. Boy, they're good eating too. And right around at picnic, they would be fishing too for whitefish. And some would be
inside the lagoon?
Yeah, inside the lagoon. At the point, people who lived there would be fishing also with nets right in the lagoon by the village. There aren't too many, but they can catch some with nets. And all through the summer, they use seal nets to hunt seals right at the lagoon there. Even though when there is no ice, there would be some seals right inside there. And as soon as the whaling season opens, or when the whales start to come back from the east, that is early in the fall, they would go out hunt for them early in the fall, just before freeze up. People from Barrow would go to the point and do also join the others for whaling out there. Live with the people out there while the good weather lasts. And when it freeze up, when the ice comes in, they would start hunting for seals. Whenever there is an open water, they would hunt seals. And some even would use seal nets also in winter.
Did they do that here at Utqiagvik or was that out at the point?
Both. Both places. Some would hunt them by looking at the breathing holes and wait for them in winter. And some would set nets on a breathing hole and in some cracks that has been frozen over. They would set their nets that way. And some would find a good spot when there is a good weather while the ice has an open lid out there. And they would look for a right spot so they can be using their nets during the night, not in the daytime. When a person is lucky, he would get more than 40 a night.
40 seals?
40 seals or more during the night when he is lucky. I know some in my time that get somewhere around 20 or more or less or a few just at night. And when the caribou is around, it depends whether they are around or not. In the winter, they would hunt for caribou along the line when they are available. But most of the time, there never was any caribou near the coast. But I have heard before my time that there were quite a bunch of caribou around at the time.
In the winter or?
In the winter, yes.
In the winter?
And also in summer. The hunters in summer would go out in kayaks as teams. Two people would go together in order to help each other. And go up by the small creeks and into the lake, carry their kayaks into the lake and start over again, and almost until they hit that first river out there, hunt for caribou when they are around.
When they were hunting for whale in the fall, then did they always do it out at Novuk?
Yes.
Not here?
Some, when they are close by, they would do them, go hunting too, right from the village here.
Oh.
But in most cases, they had to go up the point, which is further out.
What about in the springtime, spring whaling?
Spring whaling is always done on the shore ice, right out from the barrel, always. And there, and the people at Novo would do it right out from the village too.
Oh, okay. So then in the springtime they could stay here and go out on the ice here and whale. Did they catch any bear?
Yes. Here? As long as there's ice on the ocean.
Mostly polar bear.
Yeah, mostly polar bear.
They ever get any brown bear?
No. Mm-hmm. No, not brown bear close by, but only the ones that go up caribou hunting in summer would get one or two, and very seldom see any at the time.
What about fox and wolverine and wolf?
Yes. Fox is plentiful at the time, anywhere along the coast, up inland, way up inland, up east. But wolverine and wolves, you have to go way up the hills in order to be able to see some of those animals, like wolverine and wolves.
Did they do any fishing right here by Tiavik?
No. The only time they would be fishing is they had to get away from the village. Like I said, as soon as the ice is raking up the tide at the Austin Lagoon here, is fishing off through the summer with nets for white fish. And also, the ones that goes up the river, caribou hunting, once they get out there, whenever they start to follow the edge of the lagoon thaw, anywhere they camp, they can set their net and there will be fish right along that coast. Even when they get into the river and up the river, there are fish. Especially early in the fall, we would right along the coast, down towards Wainwright, any good spot you would see some greens with the reds sticking up, something like leaves on the bottom side, and the stalks are kind of red.
Stalks are kind of red?
Yeah. We call them kongulak. There's three.
Kongulak,
kongulak. And in some places where there are some small gullies or creeks, the greens will grow up. These are the ones that they pick up and put them in fuel oil. Use them before the air spoils. And also up the rivers, they would pick some kind of a, I don't know what you call them, but we call them mussel, something that's almost thick as this, my small finger, that were just below the surface of the ground. They had stalks, something green grows up and dip there, side away and dip those up. They call them mussel. They cook them.
Oh yeah, that's like a potato.
Yeah.
I've never had that. I'd like to try it. Do people still go get that?
Not recently, probably. Oh. Except the ones that knows how to do it, I think.
Yeah.
They're kind of rare. They have to almost be an expert in order to find what they are.
Any kind of berries?
Hmm?
Were there any kind of berries
yeah.
out here?
Some salmon berries up the rivers. Like some would grow on this side of Akasup. There's some spots there. And I think you go further down, there will be a bunch of them growing apart, salmon berries. And the some other kind of a berries that are still smaller than these, and that almost look like wool berries and small red berries.
What about did they use willow branches on the floors of the houses here?
Yes.
Where did they get the willow?
Not here, but the ones who made a camp up the rivers, up inland, where the willows are.
Yeah. What was the most important food at Utsiavik in the old days?
The most important food is the whale, because it supplies the whole village. Even one can supply the whole village for some time. Of course, the people at the time were not too many. although they have something else like walrus, hoogoo. They would rather have a quail moose, but whenever they get only one, the share is big for each person who participates in that quail. Especially the blubber is also is thick and bigger. A walrus is also very important because of the tusk and the hide and the meat itself. The tusks were used for sled runners and also for some kind of a tool.
For tools.
Or handlebars or some
yeah.
something and make a spearhead for walrus hunting spear, oogluk and seal. And also made into some kind of a handle for knives and things like that. They even use them for the handles for Eskimo drum that time. It's used for to make many things, like scraping scrapers for the skin.
Will they make the scraper from it or the handle for the scraper?
Handle for the handle. The scraper itself is made out of a flint. They make a hollow in that handle and shove that flint into it. And there you have that scraper.
Is the Utsiavik site still important to you today?
Well, I think it is. To me, I would rather not disturb the old site there. So the generation after us may know where the old site is and the indications where the houses had stood one time. From that point of view, I would rather not disturb those old dwelling places there.
How did you learn things about the Utsiavik site?
From the stories I have heard from the older people that live here.
Have you been interviewed before about the Utsiavik site?
I don't remember if I have, but I don't think so.
What do you think about the archaeological thing that they're going to, excavation they're going to do here this summer?
Does that mean that they are going to disturb those old dwelling places there?
They're going to disturb a few of them, not very many of them, but a few.
I would think that the place be not be disturbed. Like I said, they're valuable. I would want all of them to be disturbed, just in order to find a few artifacts and things like that.
Okay, that's the end of the interview. And that's the end of this tape.